Aldini travelled to London and reanimated the body of a dead murderer. The success of this work allegedly helped inspire Mary Shelley to write Frankenstein, and also encouraged Aldini to apply electricity to the skulls of melancholy patients in the hope of improving their mood. The technique was refined over the years, and now forms one of the standard tools in neuroscience. In 2004, Jan Born from the University of Tübingen in Germany set out to discover if TDCS could be used to boost sleep, and so improve people's memories for facts and figures. Born asked volunteers to come to his sleep laboratory, remember a list of words, and then head for bed. Although any type of sleep enhances memory, some work shows that learning facts and figures is especially associated with deep sleep, stages 3 and 4 of the sleep cycle. Because of this, Born waited until each volunteer entered deep sleep and then applied TDCS to the front areas of their brains. This stimulation had the desired effect of encouraging the neurons in this area to produce even deeper levels of slow-wave activity. The volunteers were then woken up and asked to remember the list of words. As a control, the researchers also arranged for the volunteers to carry out the same procedure on another night, but switched off the TDCS unit so that they didn't receive any electrical stimulation. Even though the volunteers didn't know which night their brains had been stimulated, the results revealed that they remembered more words when they had received the TDCS. It is early days, but this type of technology could play an important role in helping people maintain their memories long into old age. In addition, if the theory is right, then other procedures that have been known to boost deep sleep, such as exercising more during the day or going to bed earlier than usual, may also help improve elderly people's memories. The power of napping. Sleep learning does not require a full night of rest. In fact, even the shortest of naps can have a surprisingly big impact. In one Harvard study, for instance, volunteers were asked to try to memorize a list of words. Half of these volunteers were then allowed to take a 20-minute nap, while the others remained awake. When the researchers repeated the tests 4 hours later, they found that the power nap had significantly boosted the volunteers' memory. Exactly the same is true for those trying to learn new physical skills and abilities. Other research has shown that even a few minutes spent napping can make all of the difference. In 2008, for instance, German scientists from the University of Düsseldorf asked volunteers to memorize a list of words and then randomly allocated them to one of three groups. The first group remained awake, the second slept for about 40 minutes, and the third took a quick 6-minute nap. When asked to recall the words, the wide awake club did okay, the 40-minute sleepers did better, and those who nodded off for just 6 minutes came top of the class. The effect even works on the youngest of minds. In 2013, psychologist Rebecca Spencer from the University of Massachusetts Amherst investigated whether a quick nap boosted the memories of children who were between 3 and 5 years old. Spencer first asked the children to play a memory game in which they had to try to remember the location of various pictures in a grid. The children were then either encouraged to nap for just over an hour or remain wide awake for the same amount of time. Finally, the children's memory for the location of the pictures was tested the following day. The results provided more evidence for the power of napping, showing that the short nap boosted the children's memories by a remarkable 10%. Developing a superpowered memory is not the only psychological benefit to be gained through napping. Research by NASA revealed that pilots who take a 25-minute nap in the cockpit, hopefully with a co-pilot taking over the controls, are subsequently 35% more alert and twice as focused than their non-napping colleagues. And in 2009, sleep researcher Kimberly Coate from Brock University in America reviewed the vast amount of psychological work into napping and concluded that even the shortest of snoozes causes significant improvements in people's mood, reaction time, and alertness. Psychologists are not the only ones to have become interested in the power of a cat nap. Harvard University medical researcher Dimitrios Trikopoulos recently published the results of a 6-year study into health and napping. Trikopoulos and his team studied the lives of more than 20,000 adults aged between 20 and 80. All of the participants were asked about their dietary habits, levels of physical exercise, and the extent to which they napped. Even after taking age and level of physical activity into account, those who took a 30-minute siesta at least 3 times a week had a 37% lower risk of heart-related death. Trikopoulos's finding may explain why coronary disease is very low in cultures that encourage daily siestas. Additional work by Mohamed Zaregarizi from Liverpool John Moores University suggested that these nap-related health benefits may be due to a lowering of blood pressure. Zaregarizi monitored the blood pressure of people as they spent up to an hour, either napping, standing up wide awake, or lying down without sleeping. Only those napping showed a significant drop in blood pressure. Zaregarizi's results also revealed that the napping volunteers experienced the biggest drop in blood pressure in the time between them lying down and falling asleep, showing that just the expectation of a nap is good for your body, and that even a shortest of snoozes will benefit your health. Napping is often seen as a form of laziness. Nothing could be further from the truth. Hundreds of experiments have demonstrated the enormous benefits associated with even the shortest of sleeps. And so it is vital that you make napping part of your daily routine. Putting your head down for just a few minutes each day will help you develop a better memory. Putting your head down for just a few minutes each day will help you develop a better memory, be more alert, increase your reaction time, and boost your productivity. Perhaps most important of all, it may even save your life. Inspired by the psychological and physical benefits of napping, researchers have explored many aspects relating to the science of snoozing. The following FAQ will help you enjoy the perfect power nap. Where should I nap? Find a dark, quiet place where you won't be disturbed by telephones, emails, doorbells, pets, or other people. Your body temperature will drop when you fall asleep, so choose a warm room or wrap yourself in a light blanket. If your chosen room is not especially dark or quiet, try wearing an eye mask and earplugs. Some people, especially those of an introverted disposition, also find it helpful to listen to some sort of constant background sound, such as a relaxation tape, a soporific podcast, or monotonous sports commentary. What if I'm at the office and my only option is to lean forwards onto a desk? Excellent question. In 2012, Daiyong Zhao and his colleagues from the Southwest University in China attached a group of experienced nappers to an EEG machine and then measured their attentiveness by having them listen to a string of musical notes and spot the occasional one that had a different pitch. The volunteers were then randomly assigned to one of 3 groups. One of the groups enjoyed a 20-minute nap lying down. Another was given a pillow and asked to nap by leaning forwards onto a desk. And the final group spent the same amount of time sitting quietly. Afterwards, all of the volunteers' attentiveness was measured a second time. Compared to those that had just been sitting quietly, both the leaning and lying nappers were in a better mood, felt less sleepy, and were more attentive. Interestingly, those that had been lying down and leaning forwards rated their naps as equally beneficial. However, the EEG and attentiveness data told a different story, showing that those who had been lying down had obtained a greater amount of deep sleep and woke up significantly more alert. Lie down if you can. But even grabbing a quick nap while leaning forwards has clear benefits. Oh, and if your boss isn't happy about you catching a quick nap at work, show them the vast amount of research demonstrating that getting your head down for a few minutes will make you far more productive, successful, and creative than your non-napping colleagues. How long should I nap for? Lots of research has examined how long you should spend in the land of Nod. There is no magic rule about the perfect power nap, as each nap length is associated with different benefits. Here is a quick guide. The micro nap, less than 5 minutes. This nap doesn't produce much in the way of psychological or physical benefits, but if you are very tired, it will help you shed some of the sleepiness. The short nap, 10 to 20 minutes. During this type of nap, your brain will mostly be in light sleep, stages 1 and 2, but may experience a small amount of deep sleep, stages 3 and 4, towards the end of the session. The large amount of light sleep will result in you feeling much more alert and focused when you wake up. Evidence also suggests that this type of nap will help improve your muscle memory for new skills and abilities, and will yield several health-related benefits, including a lowering of blood pressure. The long nap, 20 to 60 minutes. During this longer nap, your brain will spend lots of time in both light and deep sleep. In addition to having all of the benefits associated with the short nap, this will promote your ability to learn facts and figures. In addition, your brain will also start to release growth hormones, resulting in you feeling more energized when you wake up. However, you might emerge feeling groggy because you are waking up from a deeper sleep, but this should wear off after about 30 minutes. The full nap, 60 to 90 minutes. During this nap, your brain will complete a single sleep cycle, experiencing light sleep, deep sleep, and the REM state. These naps have the benefits associated with the long nap, and in addition, the REM state helps enhance your creative thinking and ability to grasp abstract concepts. More about this in Lesson 7. In addition, you shouldn't feel groggy when you wake up, because you will be coming round after a REM period. When should I nap? Most people feel the need to nap in mid-afternoon because this is when a dip in their circadian rhythm makes them feel especially tired and lethargic. However, sleep expert Sara Mednick from the University of California has examined how the time that you wake up in the morning influences when you should nap in the afternoon. In her book, Take a Nap, Change Your Life, Mednick argues that the perfect nap should be 90 minutes long and contain the same percentage of light sleep, deep sleep, and REM that we experience during the night. According to her research, this unique combination is most likely to provide the maximum level of psychological and physical benefits. If you want to give Mednick's theory a try, use the following table to discover when you should take a nap. Wake up time 6 a.m. Perfect nap time, 1:30 p.m. Wake up time, 6:30 a.m. Perfect nap time, 1:45 p.m. Wake up time, 7 a.m. Perfect nap time, 2 p.m. Wake up time, 7:30 a.m. Perfect nap time, 2:15 p.m. Wake up time, 8 a.m. Perfect nap time, 2:30 p.m. Wake up time, 8:30 a.m. Perfect nap time, 2:45 p.m. Wake up time, 9 a.m. Perfect nap time, 3 p.m. What if I feel guilty about napping? It is vital that you get rid of any lingering doubts about whether napping is a good use of your time. Instead, remind yourself that naps can make you more alert, improve your reaction time, help you become more creative, reduce accidents, and put you into a better mood. In fact, you should start to feel guilty if you are not taking a nap during the day. What if I worry about oversleeping? To ensure that you don't snooze too long, set an alarm. Oh, and don't worry if you don't fall asleep. Research shows that even just lying down with the intention of napping is enough to cause a healthy reduction in your blood pressure. Do you have one other great final tip? If you need to feel wide awake directly after having a short nap, drink a cup of coffee or other caffeinated drink just before dozing off. The caffeine will start to work its magic about 25 minutes later, just as you are waking up. We are almost at the end of our journey into sleep learning. There is, however, one final twist in the tale. At the very start of the lesson, I described how researchers had whispered into sleepers' ears in an attempt to stop them biting their nails, suppress their criminal tendencies, and learn a foreign language. The work failed because it was based on an incorrect understanding of the sleeping mind. However, several modern-day sleep scientists have recently followed in the footsteps of these pioneering researchers and revisited the idea of presenting people with information when they are sound asleep. These scientists have not, however, been creeping into log cabins or bombarding Russian towns with secret radio messages. Instead, they've been encouraging them to smell the roses and to get in touch with their inner Jimi Hendrix. Sweet dreams. In 2010, Google purchased several high-tech nap pods for employees at their Googleplex headquarters in California. These futuristic devices consist of a specially designed reclining chair and a large spherical hood about a meter in diameter. Those wishing to take a quick nap lie down on the chair and so are placed into a position that promotes blood circulation and reduces pressure on the lower back. The spherical hood is then placed around their head, and for 20 minutes or so they listen to low-frequency rhythms that aid relaxation and help to eliminate surrounding noise. When it is time to return to the real world, the person is gently woken using a combination of lights and vibration. The benefits of the pods quickly became apparent, with Google reporting that even the shortest of naps reinvigorated employees and made them ready to face the remainder of the day. Google are not the only organization to wake up to the power of sleep. However, creating the perfect space for a quick snooze doesn't need to involve buying a high-tech nap pod. In fact, it can be done quickly and economically. A few years ago, I took over a large room at my university, flooded it with a strange shade of green light, proven to enhance the brain's production of a feel-good neurotransmitter called dopamine, and lit the ceiling to resemble a beautiful blue sky. Volunteers were asked to lie down on a soft yoga mat, rest their head on a lavender-scented pillow, and listen to a specially commissioned, soothing soundtrack. The room acted like the ultimate sleeping potion, with all of the volunteers finding it remarkably easy to spend a few minutes napping. After about 20 minutes enjoying a light sleep, they woke feeling especially alert and refreshed. Also, there is the question of rocking. Sophie Schwartz from the University of Geneva asked volunteers to take 45-minute afternoon naps on an experimental hammock that either remained stationary or rocked gently from side to side. Throughout each session, the volunteers had their brain activity monitored. Even a small amount of gentle rocking dramatically increased the amount of deep sleep experienced by the volunteers, suggesting napping in a hammock or a rocking chair is a scientifically sound way of boosting your brain power. Neuronapping. In 2007, Jan Born from the University of Lübeck in Germany announced the results of a strange study into sleep learning. At the start of the experiment, Born had laid several picture postcards on a table in his laboratory and sprayed a subtle rose scent into the air. Volunteers went into the room one at a time, tried to memorize the location of the postcards, and then spent the night in Born's sleep laboratory. Each volunteer was randomly assigned to one of two groups. whenever those in one of the groups entered deep sleep, stage 3 or 4, Born wafted the rose scent under their nose. Those in the other group had a scent-free night. The following day, each of the volunteers was asked to remember the location of the postcards. Born speculated that the nighttime scent would remind the volunteer's sleeping brain about the postcards, and so would enhance their performance in the memory test the next morning. The results, published in the world's top academic journal, Science, showed that he was right. The volunteers who had smelt the roses in their sleep remembered the location of far more postcards. This is not the only modern-day study to demonstrate that it is indeed possible to learn in your sleep. Ken Pales, a psychologist from Northwestern University in America, who wanted to discover if people became better musicians if they were subjected to music in their sleep. Using an arrangement reminiscent of the computer game Guitar Hero, Pala first asked volunteers to learn 2 new tunes by using their left hands to tap the songs out on a computer keyboard. These volunteers were then connected to an EEG system, asked to put on a pair of headphones, and encouraged to take a 90-minute nap. When the EEG output indicated that the snoozers were in deep sleep, the researchers surreptitiously played one of the songs through the headphones. The volunteers were then woken and asked to try to tap out both of the tunes again. The results revealed that the volunteers were better at playing both songs post-siesta, but that they were especially good at playing the song that they had heard while sound asleep. This work lies at the heart of a new form of sleep learning that I have labeled neuronapping. Scientists' work has revealed that we all sleep learn every night of our lives. Although it may feel like your brain switches off when you go to bed or take a nap, research shows that your unconscious mind is busy sifting through your thoughts, deleting those that you no longer need, and replacing them with new information. Perhaps most importantly of all, when you understand how this process works, you can use it to boost your memory, master a musical instrument, become better at sport, and be more creative. Sleep learning is not the stuff of science fiction. It's just yet another example of your sleeping brain in action. A little night music. This procedure is based on the latest research into sleep learning and involves a new technique that I refer to as neuronapping. The procedure lasts about an hour and is best carried out in the early afternoon. Choose a piece of music that doesn't have any strong associations for you, that you find pleasant to listen to and is relatively quiet. Any piece of instrumental, non-jarring, highly repetitive background music will usually work well. Play the music quietly in the background while you spend around 20 minutes preparing for an exam or interview, rehearsing for a presentation or play, learning a new language, practicing a new dancing or juggling routine, training for a sport, or trying to find a creative solution to a problem. Turn off the music for 10 minutes and take a break. Now, turn on the same piece of music again, lie down, close your eyes, and take a nap for about 30 minutes. If you struggle to nap, try following the guidelines described earlier in this lesson. The music will encourage your brain to continue working away on the exercise as you sleep, and when you wake up, you will discover a significant improvement in your mind and body. Assignment: The Night School Dream Diary. We're about to begin our journey into the heady world of dreaming. To get the most out of the next few lessons, it would be handy if you knew more about the events that take place in your dreams. The following tried and tested procedure has been developed by sleep scientists to help people remember their dreams. 1. Find a notebook. Some people like to use an expensive leather-bound journal, and others go with something far more economical. 2. Place your notebook and a pen or pencil on your bedside table. 3. Just before you go to bed, write this list of words down the left-hand side of a new page in your notebook, ensuring that there are equally sized gaps between the words. Cast, location, plot, period, emotion, other. 4. As you are falling asleep, tell yourself that you will remember your dreams. Repeat this instruction in your head 3 times. 5. When you wake up after a dream or first thing in the morning, do not open your eyes or move around. Instead, lie with your eyes shut and allow the fragments of your dream to drift together. If you are struggling to wake up after a dream, try drinking lots of water before you go to bed to encourage nighttime awakenings. If all else fails, set your alarm clock to sound about 6 hours after you've gone to bed. 6. As you lie in bed, try to remember more about your dream by treating it like a play. Ask yourself the following type of questions. Cast. Who was involved in the dream? Did you know the people or were they strangers? How were they dressed? Did the dream involve any animals or non-human figures? Location. Where did the dream take place? Was it indoors or outdoors? Did you recognize the location? Plot. What happened in the dream? Was there a narrative thread running through it, or was it more random? Period. What was the time frame? Was the dream set in the past, present, or future? Were you the same age as now? Or were you younger or older? Emotion. How did you feel in the dream? Most dreams elicit negative emotions. So don't worry if the dream did not make you feel especially good. However, try to identify exactly how you felt. Other. Was the dream in color or black and white? What do you think caused the dream? Does it seem to contain any obvious symbolism that relates to what is happening in your life? 7. Now open your eyes and write your answers in your notebook. Perhaps fill the page following with any drawings or diagrams that help illustrate your dream. Please try to keep your dream diary each night for about 2 weeks. Don't worry if you struggle to remember your dreams during the first few nights. Dream recall takes practice and patience. Persevere, and by the end of the 2 weeks, you will find that you are able to produce a surprisingly detailed description of your nighttime fantasies. Lesson 6. Welcome to Dreamland, where we spend time at an ancient Greek sleep sanctuary. Discover if you have the gift of prophecy and uncover the secret symbolism in your dreams. Each night, millions of people journey to an imaginary land and encounter a colorful cast of curious characters, strange animals, and supernatural entities. Unfortunately, trying to find out exactly what goes on in people's dreams is extremely problematic. The vast majority of folk struggle to remember their nighttime adventures, and at best, usually produce reports that feel patchy and incomplete. As the modern-day sleep researcher Rosalind Cartwright once noted, attempting to investigate dreams using these fragmented reports is much like trying to figure out how jokes work when you can only hear the punchlines. Because of this, the true nature of these weird experiences remained a mystery for centuries. Then, in the early 1950s, everything changed. In Lesson 1, I described how Eugene Ossorinsky transformed the science of dreaming overnight. Ossorinsky's work centered on a strange stage of sleep that he labeled rapid eye movement, REM. When people enter this stage, their brains become highly active. Their eyes dart from side to side, their sexual organs get all frisky, and their bodies become almost completely paralyzed. Ossorinsky discovered that if someone is woken up directly after they have experienced REM, they almost always produce a long and detailed description of a dream. This simple discovery provided sleep researchers with a direct route into the dreaming mind. To return to Cartwright's comedy analogy, sleep scientists were no longer limited to working with punchlines, but instead had unlimited access to complete jokes and entire routines. They quickly set about exploring this brave new world, and their work has uncovered the surprising truth about the strange events that take place in your mind each night. We are going to follow in the footsteps of the intrepid sleep scientists who used Ossorinsky's discovery to test two of the oldest ideas about why we dream. Along the way, we're going to see whether your dreams can predict the future, meet one of the world's most influential thinkers, and find out if you have a dirty mind. Let's begin with a spot of time travel. A gift from the gods. Many people living in the ancient world assumed that dreams were supernatural in nature. For instance, the good folk of ancient Mesopotamia believed that when a person fell asleep, their soul left their body and went walkies, and dreams were the result of people seeing the world through the eyes of their wandering soul. This blurring of fact and fiction occasionally caused more than its fair share of confusion, with, for example, entire communities being thrown into panic when several people dreamt about seeing enemy forces approaching. In contrast, the ancient Babylonians were equally convinced that dreams were a gift from the gods, with pleasant dreams coming from benign deities, and nightmares being sent by demons. These approaches to dreaming, although fascinating, pale into insignificance when compared to the elaborate ideas and schemes developed in ancient Greece. The ancient Greeks believed that certain dreams contained God-given messages that were designed to help people make important life decisions. Around 200 BC, dodgy priests started to exploit this belief by charging wealthy citizens to attend special sleep sanctuaries. These sanctuaries were constructed on sacred sites and claimed to help people receive advice from their favorite deity. To find out what these sleep sanctuaries were all about, let's travel back in time and imagine that you are a well-heeled merchant in ancient Greece. Nice tunic. Unfortunately, all is not well in your life because you think that your wife no longer loves you, and worse still, that she might be having an affair with the teacher next door. After months of indecision, you finally decide to grab the bull by the horns and ask for some advice from the goddess of love, Aphrodite. Eager to get the attention of this busy goddess, you contact your local sleep sanctuary and ask for an appointment. Luckily, the sanctuary has just had a cancellation, and so they're able to fit you in quite quickly. Apparently, the god of time, Kronos, had to pull out of a session because he had double-booked. You are instructed to spend the 48 hours before your visit completely abstaining from both food and sex. Given your current marital situation, only one of these proves challenging. The big day has now arrived. Hungry and horny, you make your way to the sanctuary, meet a priest, and hand over your hard-earned drachma. The priest asks you to sacrifice a goat, and then leads you through a series of catacombs until you arrive at a sacred room. Struggling to see in the darkness, you are just able to make out a bed-sized slab of stone. As your eyes slowly adjust to the low light, you see that the slab is covered with the skin from your recent sacrifice, and that the floor is a seething mass of snakes. The priest explains that these animals symbolize transformation, and during your time at the sanctuary, he hopes you will change your life in the same way that a snake sheds its skin. This symbolism has stood the test of time, with the logos of many modern-day medical organizations containing snake-like imagery. The priest then asks you to hold a small statuette of Aphrodite in your clenched fist, and wraps a band of cloth around your hand, to ensure that this sacred object remains close to you throughout the night. Finally, you are asked to carefully pick your way through the snakes, lie on the stone bed, and settle down for the night, accompanied by the gentle whiff of freshly slaughtered goat and the soothing sound of slithering snakes. You try your best to nod off. Throughout the night, the priest quietly comes over to the bed to ensure that all is well, and encourages you to sip water from his sacred bowl. As the night wears on, you experience several bizarre dreams before apparently hearing Aphrodite whisper in your ear. In the morning, you are woken up by the priest and asked to describe the dreams and messages that came to you during the night. The priest then uses this information to figure out your best course of action. On this occasion, it's bad news, with your dreams and messages strongly suggesting that the next-door teacher and your wife are not spending their time together studying moral philosophy. As dawn breaks, the priest hands over the bloodied goatskin as a memento of your time at the sanctuary, thanks you for coming, and sends you on your way. Were the strange phenomena that you experienced at the sanctuary evidence of the supernatural power of dreams? Probably not. Many modern-day sleep scientists have argued that the rituals associated with the sanctuaries, including the fasting, the goat slaying, the snakes, and the tying of the hand into a fist, would have all helped create especially unusual and vivid dreams. Others have gone even further, accusing the priests of engaging in various forms of jiggery-pokery, including lacing the sacred water with opium and producing the godlike voices via ventriloquism, thus explaining why many of the allegedly divine messages contained the phrases "gottle of gear" and "I'm not coming out of the box." Despite the deeply dodgy nature of the ancient Greek sleep sanctuaries, the association between dreaming and the supernatural has stood the test of time. By far the most popular paranormal take on the topic suggests that dreams may provide a brief peek into the future. Although the notion may sound a tad far-fetched to those of a more skeptical bent, the whole of human history is littered with evidence in favor of prophetic dreaming. To take just a few examples, the night before the Battle of Waterloo, Napoleon foresaw the defeat of his forces. Abraham Lincoln dreamt about being killed 2 weeks before he was assassinated. And in the Bible, Joseph uses the Pharaoh's dreams accurately to predict that Egypt will experience 7 years of famine. The majority of modern-day minds also buy into the prophetic power of dreams. In 2009, a team of researchers from Carnegie Mellon University asked hundreds of commuters in Boston to imagine that they were about to take a flight and to rate how anxious they felt about the trip. Before making their ratings, each of the volunteers was asked to think about one of four scenarios. One group were told to imagine that the government had just announced that there was a high likelihood of a terrorist attack. Another group were instructed to think about their plane crashing. The third group were told that another plane had just crashed on the same route. And the final group were instructed to imagine that they had dreamt about their plane crashing the previous night. You might think the volunteers would feel most anxious after hearing about the government warning, or that another plane on the same route had just nosedived into the ground. Amazingly, the volunteers that imagined having a plane-related bad dream were the most likely to tick the high anxiety box. Is there anything to this belief? Is it really possible for your dreaming mind to take a peek into the future? If so, what does that tell us about the nature of dreams? And if not, why do so many people have these weird experiences? To find out the answers to these questions and more, we are going to join a group of maverick researchers as they stage some of the strangest studies in the entire history of sleep science. The Prince of Percipients. During the early 1960s, several kaftan-wearing, pot-smoking, paradigm-shifting self-development gurus became convinced that dreams were a vast powerhouse of paranormal energy. "Learn to tap into this strange state of consciousness," ran the argument, "and you will be able to develop amazing magical powers and enjoy the gift of prophecy." This mystical take on dreaming chimed with the then popular notions of unlimited human potential and psychedelic exploration, and so quickly spread from one tie-dyed commune to another. Soon every self-respecting hippie was hanging a dream catcher on their window, lying down and tuning out, and trying to unlock the magic in their sleeping minds. Energized by this sudden interest in the supposedly paranormal power of dreaming, a handful of researchers working at the fringes of sleep science decided to discover whether there was anything to these bizarre claims. Much of this research was conducted by a 31-year-old New Yorker named Montague Ullman. At the time, Ullman was training to become a fully-fledged Freudian analyst, and had noticed that many of his patients' dreams seemed to predict the future, or involve some form of telepathic communication. Intrigued, the energetic Ullman teamed up with a parapsychologist named Stanley Krippner, and together they established a dream laboratory at the Maimonides Medical Center in New York. Ullman and Krippner spent the next 10 years carrying out a series of studies examining the possibility of dream telepathy. In a typical study, one volunteer referred to as the percipient would be connected to an EEG machine and spend the night sleeping in the laboratory. Meanwhile, a second person, the agent, would be placed into a nearby room and given a randomly selected art print, the target. Whenever the EEG data suggested that the percipient was dreaming, the agent would be instructed to focus their attention on the art print. Then, a few moments after the EEG data showed that the dream had finished, the percipient would be woken up and asked to describe their dream in as much detail as possible. Finally, an experimenter and the percipient would rate the degree of similarity between the dreams and a small collection of art prints, including the target print. To avoid possible bias during this rating procedure, neither the experimenter nor the percipient knew which of the art prints had served as the target. If the target print was judged to be similar to the dream, the session was designated a hit. Otherwise, it was seen as a miss. Many of the experiments obtained statistically significant results and seemed to suggest that something spooky was going on. Thrilled with these findings, Ullman and Krippner eventually decided to venture outside of their laboratory and stage similar studies in the real world. Sleep science hit an all-time high on the strangeometer when the dynamic duo decided to stage an ambitious experiment with the legendary rock band The Grateful Dead. Formed in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 1960s, The Grateful Dead lay at the cutting edge of the West Coast acid culture. They quickly developed a loyal following, affectionately known as Deadheads, and played to huge, trippy crowds. In 1970, the band's lead guitarist, Jerry Garcia, the inspiration for Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia ice cream, happened to bump into Krippner at a party. The two of them chatted, discovered that they were both interested in the potential paranormal power of the mind, and hatched a cunning plan to conduct the world's largest dream telepathy experiment. In February 1971, thousands of spectators crammed into the Capitol Theater in New York State to hear The Grateful Dead. What the audience didn't know, however, was that they would be taking part in an ambitious parapsychology experiment. In the middle of the concert, several pictures were projected behind the band, along with a message asking the Deadheads to concentrate on the images and psychically beam them across the city. A few hours before the concert, a psychic named Malcolm Besant had arrived at Krippner's dream laboratory and settled down for the night. There, the laboratory's researchers were tasked with waking Besant several times throughout the night and asking him to report his dreams. Publishing the results in the Journal of the American Society of Psychosomatic Dentistry and Medicine, just before an article on the personality correlates of venereal disease, Krippner described several striking matches between the images and Besant's dreams. For example, one of the paintings projected during the gig was called The Seven Spinal Chakras and showed a man deep in meditation and with each of his chakras vividly illuminated. Besant was woken when the deadheads were looking at the painting and reported a dream in which he was very interested in using natural energy, thinking about rocket ships, an energy box, and a spinal column. After a decade of research, Ullman and Krippner believed that their data demonstrated the paranormal power of dreams. However, when it comes to overturning the known laws of physics, most mainstream scientists are not swayed by a series of experiments emerging from a single laboratory. Instead, it's vital that these studies are successfully replicated by other groups of researchers working at several different establishments. Over the years, many scientists have explored the supernatural side of sleep and attempted to reproduce Ullman and Krippner's seemingly remarkable results. In fact, one of the most elaborate attempts took place very recently, and I was fortunate enough to be involved. Do you have the gift? Carry out the following two experiments to help discover if you have the ability to dream about the future. Experiment 1. 1. Choose any national daily newspaper that contains at least 20 pages, but don't buy a copy of it yet. 2. Place your dream diary on your bedside table. 3. When you go to bed, tell yourself that you want to dream about the images and stories that will be printed on page 5 of your chosen newspaper the following day. 4. Use the techniques from the dream diary to produce an account of your dreams. 5. In the morning, buy a copy of your chosen newspaper and look at page 5. How do your dreams compare to what is on the page? If you are not especially successful with this informal test, then you can sleep soundly at night, safe in the knowledge that your dreams can't predict the future. If, however, you seem to be getting more than your fair share of hits, move on to experiment 2. Experiment 2. 1. For this, you will need the dream diary, a 6-sided die, a plastic cup, and a friend. 2. Once again, put the dream diary on your bedside table. Before you go to bed, place the die into the plastic cup, place your hand over the top of the cup, and shake the cup. Next, place the cup face down onto your bedside table so that you don't know which number is showing on the top of the die. 3. As before, dream away and make a note of your dreams in your diary. 4. In the morning, lift the cup and look at the number showing on the die. Use the table below to convert this number into a page number. Don't use the number shown on the dice, because the earlier parts of newspapers tend to contain major news stories which might be predictable from existing news reports. Number on die, 1 or 6, target page in newspaper, page 5. Number on die, 2 or 5, target page in newspaper, page 7. Number on die, 3 or 4, target page in newspaper, page 9. 5. Buy a copy of your chosen newspaper and give it to your friend. Have them read the entry in your dream diary from the night before and compare it to the information and images on pages 5, 7 and 9 of the newspaper. Finally, ask them to choose which of the three pages shows the greatest amount of correspondence. Don't influence their choice. 6. If your friend chooses the page that corresponds with your die, then count the session as a hit. Otherwise, count it as a miss. 7. Repeat the experiment 10 times. If you score 6 or more hits, get in touch with your nearest parapsychology laboratory. False awakenings and dream detectives. I can distinctly remember waking up and the technician asking me whether it was okay to remove the electrodes that were attached to my head. I said that it would be fine, and he started to go to work. A few moments later, all of the electrodes were gone, and I was sitting up in bed, enjoying my first coffee of the day. It was just then that something strange happened. I heard the door open, and the experimenter walk into the room. I opened my eyes and realized that I'd just experienced a false awakening. In reality, I was not sitting up with a cup of coffee, but rather still lying in bed, feeling groggy and somewhat confused. Moments later, the technician was at the side of my bed for real, and started to remove the many electrodes that were glued to my head. I then climbed out of bed, got dressed, and started to drink the cup of coffee that I'd dreamt about a few moments before. I had just acted as a guinea pig in an experiment being carried out by Caroline Watt from the University of Edinburgh to discover if it's possible to reproduce some of Ullmann and Krippner's classic findings, in addition to investigating the possible existence of telepathy. A significant part of Ullmann and Krippner's work had examined whether people's dreams contained information about future events. Watt wanted to discover whether she could replicate this aspect of their research. The previous evening I had arrived at a sleep center, been wired up to an EEG machine, and climbed in to the laboratory bed. The experimenters had then monitored my EEG data throughout the night. Whenever the data indicated that I had just finished dreaming, I was woken up and asked to describe what had been going through my mind. During the night I had dreamt about being in a cave, a giant inflatable head of Frankenstein, a funeral, and then had the strange false awakening. Once the EEG sensors had been removed, one of the experimenters explained that she was about to show me a randomly selected film clip. According to the dreams can predict the future hypothesis, my nighttime experience should bear an uncanny resemblance to the film. Intrigued, I leant forward and waited for her to press the start button. The target was a film clip of a group of explorers walking through an underground ice cave. And so there did seem to be some similarity between some aspects of my dream and the clip. Perhaps I did have supernatural abilities after all. Or maybe I just got lucky. Either way, it was an interesting experience. Watt had kindly arranged the session to allow me to discover what it's like to participate in a parapsychological dream experiment. Although my result wasn't part of her main study, because she was working with volunteers who believed that they might actually have the gift of prophecy. It isn't possible to know whether any one person has paranormal powers from a single session, as any correspondence between their dreams and the film clip might just be due to chance. Instead, scientists test lots of people and then look at the resulting data en masse to see whether it suggests evidence of the extraordinary. So how did Watt's experiment go? Unfortunately, after monitoring about 20 volunteers for several nights on end, the study didn't discover any evidence in support of the supernatural. Watt is not the only one to investigate the paranormal potential of dreaming and draw a blank. A few years ago, I tested top dream detective Chris Robinson. Robinson believes that his dreams can be used to help solve crimes and avert national disasters. and claims to have predicted several terrorist incidents, including the attack on the Twin Towers and the London Underground bombings. The subject of numerous television programs, Robinson frequently informs the police about his psychic tip-offs. I investigated Robinson's alleged abilities as part of a television program looking into psychic detection. We approached Scotland Yard's Black Museum, and they kindly loaned us three objects. A scarf used by a rogue milkman to strangle a customer, a bullet that had killed a policeman as he tried to arrest two car thieves, and a shoe that had belonged to a murdered woman. We placed each object in a separate box and labelled the boxes A, B, and C. Even though Robinson was unaware of the nature of the objects or crimes, he claimed that he would be able to obtain information about them in his dreams. In addition, two other alleged psychics handled the objects and tried to divine the nature of the crimes. As a control, a group of my students were asked to look at the objects and guess what had happened during each of the crimes. I have since seen the students' exam results and can confirm they have no special abilities. A panel of researchers judged the accuracy of their comments, with the results revealing that the psychics performed no better than the students. And that's the Achilles heel of Ulmer and Krippner's work into paranormal dreaming. Over the years, many researchers have failed to replicate their remarkable findings, and as a result, the work is seen as curious, but not proof of the paranormal. This, of course, begs one final question. How is it that so many people claim to have gained a glimpse of the future in their dreams, but yet scientists have struggled to demonstrate this alleged phenomenon in their laboratories? The answer, I suspect, lays in a curious idea known as the law of large numbers. Every Saturday night, something truly amazing takes place in Britain. The chance of this event happening is an astounding 15 million to one. But nevertheless, it takes place as regular as clockwork. People win the national lottery. Delighted as we all are that a couple of complete strangers have become multimillionaires on the basis of a tiny outlay, most of us do not see their windfall as evidence of the supernatural. Why? Because we are painfully aware that millions of people buy lottery tickets each week, and that almost all of them lose their money. The National Lottery shows that if enough people attempt to do something improbable, a handful of them are likely to succeed by chance alone. That is the law of large numbers. Skeptics argue that the same explanation can account for anecdotal reports of paranormal dreams. Given that millions of people across the world have several dreams each night, it isn't surprising that some of these dreams will match future events just by chance. Cherry-pick these winning tickets from the mass of unremarkable dreams that never make the headlines, and it looks like something supernatural is taking place. Dream Interpretation, A Beginner's Guide. While some sleep scientists were investigating the notion of paranormal prophecy, others turned their attention to perhaps the most popular idea about dreaming. If you go to a party and are foolish enough to mention that you are a psychologist, you almost always hear one of two replies. First, some people say, "Oh, how interesting. Have you been analyzing me?" It's a scary moment for any psychologist, in part because you are probably only seconds away from them telling you all about their fascinating life. The second common response to the "I am a psychologist" comment concerns dreaming. Once people know that you are interested in the human mind, they frequently describe their latest dream in as much detail as possible and then ask you what you think it all